Hello, Kaiju crew. Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Talk. Tonight, we are still featuring our Turn Out the Lights October series with a 1942 classic horror monster film called Cat People. It is like the Wolfman, but with cats, and maybe a little better, too. So joining me to discuss the good, the bad, and the downright campy is Matt Levine. He joined us a few weeks ago to talk about Cronenberg's The Fly from the 80s. And Matt, I'm so happy to have you back. I'm going to let you in the room here. And we'll get started about all things cats and all things people.
Thanks, Vincent. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm drinking a glass of wine.
I'm drinking a gin and tonic.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to you as well. It's almost too cold to be doing this on my front porch. I feel like maybe this is the last week that I can actually do so here in Minnesota, but I will take advantage of it while I can.
Good point. Yeah. Though it's been nice out today. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. So you've been good. What, you been watching any other good movies?
Yeah, definitely been trying to do Horror Fest recently. So, you know, the month of October, obviously, is the perfect time for it. A couple days ago, I watched a movie called Scissors from 1991 with Sharon Stone. Pretty Basic Instinct, kind of a thriller. It's very strange, kind of surreal, very campy. There are no monsters, but other than that, I felt like it would be a perfect addition to this series. It was originally written to be an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and then they sort of expanded it to feature length many years later.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, slightly blown away. It's not a great movie, but it's a really fun, very, very good movie. So that was great. I've been watching some of the Halloween movies. You know, it's about that time. So the first sequel, Halloween 2 from 1981, is, you know, really well shot. I mean, it's pretty by the numbers, but it's really fun, really entertaining.
Yeah.
A couple movies which are sort of pseudo-horror movies, but not actually scary. Black Moon by Louis Malle, which is kind of a surreal sort of fantasy type thing. Eve's Bayou from the 90s. Samuel L. Jackson. A bunch of horror. What have you been watching?
Cool. So like not horror, but it was kind of dark, was the Cruella movie. Surprisingly good. Like it's an average by the numbers movie, but I expected far worse. So I was happy with it.
Okay, that's good to hear.
This coming weekend, I will be watching An American Werewolf in London, a personal favorite. Last night, Ellen and I watched a movie neither of us had seen, but I had heard about, Hellraiser.
Yes.
I wanted to see, like, have you seen it? Like, I almost want to talk about this.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time. That's a crazy, extremely gory movie. I feel like maybe it relies a little too much on the gore and, like, the disgusting factor more than, like, actual scariness. It's sort of legendary among, like, gore fans or whatever, so.
Yeah, well, I was like, Ellen, it's a cult classic, but I know it's got, like, a, like, its reputation is quite gory. She's like, let's do it. And I was like, I love you. Let's do it then. But aside from the gore, like, there's a pretty good, decent story in there, too, that I enjoyed. I'm interested in the sequels to a point, but maybe next year. Like, I'd have to space those out a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I feel like I'm due for a rewatch on those as well. It's been a long time, but yeah, I mean, I feel like if you would watch all those sequels within the space of, like, a week, you would just, like, curl up inside of your house and never leave again, so that would not be advised.
I know. Another quick aside, I've always kind of been a fan of the Halloween series as well. So, you know, I haven't gone, like, super deep into it, but, yeah, Halloween 2 is great. I like Season of the Witch because it's just its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an awesome fun movie, and I love pseudo sequels that are not actually really related to like the previous movies in the series.
Yeah.
Not to sort of like get to this too early, but you could say The Curse of the Cat People is sort of similar in that way. So yeah, I mean, Season of the Witch is awesome. I don't really love the Rob Zombie versions of Halloween, but the more recent ones are actually pretty good. I have to admit, I have not seen Halloween Kills yet. I'm very excited, though. But yeah, it's a good series, one of the best.
Yeah, maybe we'll include that sometime in the future. I don't know. You could go either way on his on the mythos of Michael Myers. Like, is he just a normal serial killer, or is he a force of nature, supernatural entity?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, that's a good question. That's one of the most interesting things about the series, and I think he is, the boogeyman, like the modern day version of the boogeyman as far as horror movies go. So he's
Yeah.
a my book. That's all
Yeah. Cool. Well, we can make the argument. So,
I
yeah. Feel free to bring a Halloween movie to the
Nice. I would love to. In a future installment.
Yeah, absolutely. So cat people. I'm so excited to talk about this movie. I watched it last year for the first time. I had heard that, like, I was watching something about classic horror movies, and someone featured it as, like, the first jump scare in cinema. And that had me curious. So I checked it out. I freaking loved it. And then this year, I was like, I have to talk about it from, like, an analytical point of view. Because last time, it just kind of washed over me. But last night, I rewatched it with my notebook. And man, the notes were flying. Mostly good, like 99% good. So
Yeah.
yeah, what do you got? What's your history with the movie?
Same for me, pretty much. I first watched it kind of a long time ago. I want to say 15 years ago, maybe a little bit less. But I had heard so much about these collaborations between Val Lewton, the producer who made all these great low budget horror movies for RKO, and Jacques Tourneur, the director, really great director who was a transplant from France to Hollywood and made not only Cat People, but also I Walked with a Zombie, Out of the Past, a number of other really great movies. So that I had heard so much about these collaborations, and Cat People was the first one that I saw. And I feel like it's not often that you're blown away by such a subtle movie, but that's kind of what happened the first time I saw it. And I've seen it several other times since then. I'll, give a shameless plug to I Walked with a Zombie, which is my favorite of their collaborations, but Cat People is a close second. And
Okay.
it's one of the best horror movies of that period in American cinema, in my opinion.
Well, that's great, 'cause like I so like before Cat People, honestly, my only experience with classic like 30s, 40s horror movies are the Universal Monsters, which A, I'd seen since I was a kid, so I was completely desensitized to any horror that's there. But even with that said, especially by the time you get to the 40s, they're really light on suspense and horror. Like they're kind of the action movies of their day.
Yeah.
They're just really high concept, but they're not scary. So then I watch something like Cat People, which is like the tension you can cut with a knife. Like it's really sharp and frightening. And I was like, oh my God, movies like this did exist back then. I'm only just now experiencing it. So, what are like a few other movies I should check out along these lines?
Well, I think right away of another Val Lewton movie, The Seventh Victim, although that's directed by, I think it's Mark Robson. I could be wrong about that. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, but that's a really good movie. That's kind of about a cult in New York City, and a woman sort of goes to New York to investigate the disappearance of her sister, I believe, and sort of becomes embroiled in this cult. That one's really, really great. Let's see here. I actually, this is not really all that similar of a movie, but I just watched The Most Dangerous Game yesterday.
Oh, I've wanted to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. It actually, I was thinking of it because it is kind of like the action movie of its day. It's from 1932, so it's pre-code, so you get some sort of like graphic violence and like
I love pre-code
movies. Yeah, I mean, I feel like many people are not aware of all these great sort of like sex and violence filled movies from the early 1930s. It's such a shock, and they're so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Most Dangerous Game is really great, but not really necessarily close to Cat People.
Yeah.
The Uninvited is a really good horror movie from the early 40s. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Mm-mm.
Kind of a classic haunted house movie. That's closer to Cat People in the sense that it's so much atmosphere. It's very character-based.
Okay.
Trying to do a little bit more than sort of just, a good old-fashioned spook fest or whatever. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there are others, but those are the ones that are coming to mind
now. I'll tell you, actually, you rang a bell. I watched a movie, a Michael Curtiz, Boris Karloff movie from Warner Brothers called The Walking Dead.
Hmm.
Never heard of it. I had it on like an old recorded tape, and I was like, oh, I've never seen this movie. And I watched it. It's kind of a shameless ripoff of Frankenstein. So Karloff is a man who's framed by some gangsters, and he's sent to the chair. Well, then a doctor like transplants his heart and brings him to life. And it's like mad scientist. It's like, oh my God, okay, you're doing Frankenstein. But then, so he's not like really dead, but he appears dead like to people. And he goes around killing the gangsters who set him up. And what? It's shot really well. And it's like it's like an awesome blend of gangster movies and horror movies, which are my two favorite genres.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have not watched that or even heard of it.
It was fun. Yeah.
Michael Curtiz is great. Yeah, he has another horror movie from the early 30s, Dr. X, which is really cool.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though he made Casablanca, I feel like he's still kind of an underrated director in some ways.
I love all of his movies because I'm a big Errol Flynn fan.
Yeah.
He directed like all of those movies.
Totally.
Okay. Not to get too off topic. Cat People. let's talk about all the good things we love about it before we like pick it apart if we can. I'll start off. I love the direction. I think in the hands of a lesser director, this could have just been a run-of-the-mill horror movie. And I was listening to some commentary about it today, actually, just on another podcast. And like the history, like Val Lewton specifically wanted something like really smartly done. Like this, like other people were like, oh, just, you know, rip off Universal. And he's like, no, Jacques, I want you to make a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, which is like, they were assigned the title, I think, Cat People. I'm pretty, like, I've read that RKO execs were just like, take this title, make a movie out of it.
Yep.
So it must have been sort of shocking for them to get like a pretty great movie in like return, you know? And I also read that like RKO execs were sort of disappointed by all the suggestion in the movie, the subtlety, the sort of depth of it and the sophistication. But that's, of course, what I love about it so much. So, you know, Val Lewton for sort of having the guts to do that, you know?
I feel like it somehow reminds me of those pre-code movies and just like, wow, how'd you were riding the line with the sexual themes. Mostly the sexual themes. I was like, oh my God, it's not even subtext. Like this movie is about sexual desire and the repression of sexual desire, female sexual desire.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like a kind of a courageous theme to bring up in Hollywood at that time. Yeah, especially for like RKO was kind of at the top of its game around that time. But I know Citizen Kane lost it a lot of money and they were kind of struggling. So for a struggling studio to sort of put out a movie like this, took some, you know, it was a risk. So that's pretty admirable.
Yeah, and I read it. It was an immediate success. Raised the star of everyone involved. RKO, of course, you know, and then, yeah, it was well received.
Yeah. But yeah, you're totally right about the, I mean, I think the comparison to pre-code movies is right on. And I think, even though there's not that much like on-screen violence and like the sexuality is for the most part implied, it's like a very adult movie. And you know, I guess you could say that maybe the main character of Irena is sort of like punished for her sexuality, but I don't think that's exactly correct. I think she punishes herself for it, and I think the movie sort of has a lot of sympathy for her and her inability to have a relationship with somebody that she loves because of all these sort of deep-seated anxieties and traumas that she's sort of dealing with. So yeah, the comparison that you made. And like one of the things I love so much about this movie is that it's really character-based. I think that usually makes horror even scarier when it's rooted in identifiable characters. So
And to that end, I know Lewton and Torner wanted to set it in contemporary America. Like, I know some people were like, it'll be like a gothic Victorian thing. And they're like, no. Things are scarier when they're relatable, when they're just normal people and shit goes down.
yeah, totally. And I mean, like, you know, despite the subtlety and the suggestion, I would also say that cat people, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun or like talking about scenes that you wanted to talk about, but I think this I was gonna say, I think it has like two of the best horror scenes in American cinema from around this time. That's the like the chase scene on like the city sidewalks when Alice is being sort of stalked on the sidewalks at night, and then the swimming pool scene. I think those two scenes are like still very scary and still like some of the best made suspense or horror that I've seen in any American movie, regardless of the time period. Really, really classic scenes.
And I'll add to it for my money, the scene is towards the end, where what's her character's name? The main woman,
Irena?
Urena. She is the Panther and confronts them in their office.
Yeah, incredible scene.
Oh my God. Lots of jumping around, but let's talk about those three scenes then. If you turn out the lights, you put this movie on, those scenes are frightening. Like I knew what they were coming, but I was still scared. And I want to, like, why? How do you craft something like that as a director? What is it? Is it the lighting? Is it the sound? Is there any one thing?
I think it's all of it. I think it's a great point that you make. Yeah, everything really comes together. I think in that scene where Alice is being stalked on the sidewalks, that is just like one of the most perfectly made sequences I've ever seen in a movie. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but I think it's totally true. Like every edit, every camera angle, the sound design, like you were talking about. And that's also like you were talking before about the first sort of jump scare in American movies. And that's where it happens when the bus suddenly pulls up and there's this loud screeching sound effect. You know, that has sort of indirectly led to a lot of bad horror movies and sort of, but it's amazing.
I think psychologically too, like when she's being let's you know chased down the she's being stalked down the sidewalk, she's all alone, and you don't see Irena behind her. It's all psychological. And I think this is why it scares me so much, is because I've been in that situation, walking somewhere alone at dark at night, and nothing's around you, but you just think it, and you scare yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what is happening to Alice. She's scaring herself. And then like Urena's footsteps disappear at one point. And you're like, why did her footsteps disappear?
Yeah, totally. Little touches like that just add up to this atmosphere of menace and like dread. And I think you could say that the same is kind of true for Irena, that she, you know, maybe it is all in her head, you know? And yeah, you're totally right. That kind of psychological sort of deep-seated terror will just like almost always be scarier than like gore or slashers or monsters or whatever. No disrespect to monster movies.
How dare you? But there is a monster, like she does transform into a cat.
Indeed.
Like I you know, it could be in her mind until it isn't, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This the scene that you brought up where Arena as the Panther appears in their office, in this sort of like architectural design office. I read something really interesting about that today, where the producers like demanded that Val Lewton or Jacques Tenor include an actual shot of the Panther in that space. And Lewton basically refused. And he was like, the only way this will, I wish I remembered verbatim, but he definitely said something like, the only way this will work is if we don't know exactly what's happening. If we always doubt what we're seeing and what's going on.
Yeah.
Even though you're totally right that, yes, she seemingly does turn into a panther and she is, in fact, a cat person.
You're right.
Sure of that, you know?
Yeah, like, had they not included an actual panther, yeah, we could be having a conversation about, is it in her mind? Because even when you see the panther, it's shadow work.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that could, yeah, you don't know if you're seeing what you think you're seeing.
Yeah. And that's, I won't give away the ending of the movie for anybody that hasn't seen it, but it, that leads to this really poignant ending at the zoo, outside of like the panther cage at the zoo. And yeah, this sort of blurring the line between fantasy and reality and what's in Arena's head or what's not in her head makes for a really a sad ending. Also a genuinely scary movie, which is a difficult balance to achieve, I think.
Yeah. And I, you know, the host of this podcast I was listening to, you know, they wanted to make the point that Urena didn't do anything wrong in this movie. And I tend to agree with that. Like, she's a woman trying to keep her world together. Her husband, like, she's trying to fight for things. And she does in her own way. Then the psychiatrist is a total lech and... You know?
Almost all psychiatrists are in like Hollywood movies around this time. It's hilarious, like Spellbound. I just watched something else where the psychiatrist is a villain. But yeah, it's crazy. Like the fear of psychoanalysis in Hollywood at this time is like so fascinating to me. You know?
Yeah, in my research for Dracula's Daughter, which was from 1936, there was also a psychiatrist in that, and yeah. Absolutely. This was like when psychiatry was becoming a topic for movies socially. Yeah. And they served a perfect character archetype in horror films because they could ask these probing questions of the mind, but then they always come off as, I don't know, lecherous creeps or know-it-alls, and they all die in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like equally as messed up as the people they're trying to treat, you know?
Yeah. Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry
to take away from the point that you were making there, though.
No, I don't even remember the point. I was going to shift to like images and symbolism. The movie's chock full of them. If you have any like that come out, I'll let you speak first. Otherwise, you know, I've got a list of things that I would love to talk about with those three really scary scenes.
Definitely. I mean, there is one visual symbol that comes to mind, which is kind of a good bridge from what you were just talking about, I think, which is the statue of the King of Serbia, King John of Serbia, I think it is.
Yeah.
Like slaying a wild cat that's in her apartment.
Yeah.
And one of the many fascinating things about her character is that she is an immigrant. She's from Serbia, of course, and she's living in New York. And I feel like the movie has a lot of sympathy for what immigrants go through living in the United States and trying to adapt and assimilate. I think we see this in the scene where they go to the Serbian restaurant as well, and there's the other Serbian woman who talks to her on the night of her wedding to Oliver. So yeah, the statue of King John of Serbia is a really powerful, I think, visual metaphor for her her upbringing in Serbia, which she feels like she descends from a race of cat people who, I wish I remembered all the mythology for how they came about, but you know, the people of her village supposedly became sort of witch-like when they were occupied by these Mamluk, I think they were called, this occupying force. They like descended into evil, and Raina thinks that she, along with many other like witches or cat people in her village, like fled into the forest to escape genocide, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's like still affected by that history, which she's certainly culturally part of, if she's not, you know, personally part of herself. So that's maybe a long-winded way to sort of combine the sympathy for her character with like the use of visual symbols in the movie, but that statue of King John slaying the cat is one of the best in my opinion.
I really like that because, okay, so I have two related points to what you just said. So we're on the same page. Her immigrant status, I think, is just a really unique story element for this time period anyways. On top, but actually what I took away from her was her relationship with Oliver, who's this like traditional clean-cut American, and the way he talks to her is like, oh, forget that, your home country stuff. Like, you're an American girl now. This is what we do. We kiss. And I was just seeing him as a representation of like American naivete about the rest of the world. Also, his character in a 2021 lens is the definition of white male privilege.
He says at one point, like, I've had the easiest life possible. Like, I had like no childhood traumas, no in my life. I've always had it really easy.
I
But yeah, you have, man. Indeed. He sort of admired the fact that he says it so blatantly.
I know. It's just like, you're such an idiot. You're a lovable idiot, but check yourself, good sir. Because for people who don't know the movie, Urena and he get married. They start a relationship, but she is scared and hesitant to have any physical contact with him because any rise in her emotions, sexual or otherwise, will trigger this transformation into a cat and she will kill him. So that's kind of like the main dramatic crux conflict of the movie, is that they've been married for months, it seems like, without even kissing each other. And this puts a strain on their marriage. Oliver ends up falling for his female coworker, who reveals she's always loved him. And that causes jealousy in Urena, and then, chaos ensues.
I didn't realize that we never actually provided a plot
Me
synopsis.
neither.
Important thing to do.
We'll get better at like nailing down a format for these.
That's important information.
So with that said, Oliver is just like this very sexually frustrated man. So you like he has I think his drive and desire that causes his actions are relatable. And like everyone just has strong motivations, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't think he's not a monster to use a figurative definition of that word. He doesn't do anything too terrible. Like he is patient with her, but his patience does run out eventually. And it's again, it is like pretty relatable, and that kind of does make the movie a little bit more affecting, I think, both the sort of horror elements and the drama elements, you know. And I think the scene where Oliver and Alice, his female coworker, with whom he falls in love, when they go to the museum and Irena goes with them, and Oliver and Alice just like go off on their own and like ignore Irena. They're like, oh, we'll meet you in the lobby later. And they literally walk away from her. I would be pissed if I was her too. Like, it's a very poignant scene, I think, when that happens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Urena, ultimately, I don't think she's doing anything that's something that she's not doing things any of us would not do. Like, she's feeling human emotions, but she also can't, or she'll become a cat. So it's a tough break for the girl.
We've all been there, you know.
Few other things I wanted to rattle off. With Oliver and Alice, male and female co-workers, I don't think I've ever seen that in another classic movie. I'm not saying that example doesn't exist, But you know, you'd expect Oliver to be, you know, just with the guys, and maybe Alice is his secretary. But in this case, they're equals, and I found that really unique and refreshing in a sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think maybe that's something you see occasionally in screwball comedies, like His Girl Friday comes to mind.
That's true. Yeah.
This
Yeah.
is not exactly a screwball comedy, but I feel like there's kind of colleague friction in the workplace, some sort of like mutual respect, but also mutual animosity in that movie as well. But yeah, it's a good point. They definitely are equals, and Alice is a pretty well drawn, she seems like a real person.
Yeah, and that scene in the swimming pool, this scene I think is the most haunting scene in the movie. A, pools are just really creepy at night. It's not the first movie I've seen where it uses a swimming pool as a set piece. Second, she goes into the pool because cats don't like water. So I saw that as a refuge. On top of that, with all of Urania's witchcraft talk, like there's a clear sense of religion in this movie. And I was like, holy water? It's not a pool of holy water, but I don't know. I was just like, there's a lot of water repelling the beast.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is like some, honestly, kind of weird religious stuff going on. Like Oliver and Alice are definitely like a good old-fashioned Christian couple, and Irena is sort of suggested to be this pagan devil worshiper or some sort of like other, spirituality. So
Yeah.
that, if there is like a bad category in the movie, that's like a little questionable to me. But you're right about the pool scene, which is incredible, and I think it goes back to what you were saying before about the sound design, because the growls of the cat just like escalate and get more and more sort of frenzied as the scene goes on. And then afterwards we find out that Alice's robe, her bathrobe or whatever, has been ripped to shreds while she's been in the pool. So there's just so much suggestion and so much perfect kind of construction to that scene. It's really, really effective.
And then with that scene in the office, the lighting in all of these shots, I noticed by the end, the director's using lighting via a lot of, like, I guess practical lighting that's already on set. Like a lamp will fall over, and that's what casts the light in the whole scene, or you know, or like in the office, like they're on those drawing tables that are giving off the light,
Yeah.
and that's what's lighting the scene.
Right. Yeah, it's really effective, really spooky. But it's also kind of like accentuated just a little bit more beyond reality, Obviously the black and white does that a little bit too, but just like the really deep shadows like extending all the way into the back of the frame, like
Yeah.
really lighting. Yeah, totally. It's like a realistic sort of context for the lighting, but it's one step beyond reality, I think.
Yeah, and I think this movie looks exceptionally well in black and white.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, not every black and white movie looks good in black and white, but the use of shadows is perfect.
Yeah. Nicholas Musoraka, one of the best cinematographers of so-called B movies or sort of lower budget movies of the
There you go.
era. Big fan.
What? Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's I oh okay. So did you catch, I'm sure you did, all of the phallic symbols in the movie?
So I don't know about all of them. Some of them, though, for sure. There are a lot of them. Yeah.
She was having, there's this dream sequence. You remember she's having the dream and there's animated cats, which I was on the fence with. I was like, yeah, I like it, but anytime I see animation in old movies, it kind of takes me out a little bit.
I loved it. I think it's so unexpected in this movie. I was
Yeah,
I
it was
bought it right away.
trippy. But she dreams about the sword. She dreams about a key, you know, something else that goes into something. And then I was like, oh, she's a cat.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, you get me. So I was just like, huh, funny.
Yeah, I mean, like, which makes sense for, you know, I mean, you brought up sexual repression right away at the beginning, and that's totally it. I mean, I think that's one of her main sort of what's the word? Inhibitions that she's trying to deal with.
Yeah, and King John, like that statue you mentioned, is spearing the cat with his sword.
Yeah.
So again, another, in my view, another clear sexual innuendo.
Yeah, it reminds me, it's not a phallic symbol, but it reminds me of a scene pretty early on when she and Oliver are in her apartment and they're listening to the cats in the zoo, which and the zoo is like right next door to where she lives apparently. And they're listening to these lions roar, and she's like, oh, I love listening to the lions roar. I think she says something like it sounds so beautiful, but then she says that she hates listening to the panther because it sounds like a woman. And then maybe like 10 or 15 minutes into the movie. So it's like right away, these different sort of sexual hangups are being pretty clearly conveyed, like through the character of Irina. Pretty fascinating.
Yeah, there's a podcast from Bloody Disgusting that I like called Horror Queers, and they talk about horror movies through a queer lens. And they haven't talked about this movie, but I can't help but watch horror movies now with with that in my mind. At one point I was thinking, oh, is Oliver okay with not having physical relationships because he has to be married to somebody in this time period? But then he clearly chooses to be with Alice. So I was like, well, maybe he's not gay, but it'd be really interesting if he was.
Yeah, he's weirdly asexual, I think, though, even in his relationship with Alice, you know?
That's true. Yeah. It's not his movie, so it like we don't need him to be sexual in any way.
Right.
But
And that's
that's a good point.
maybe a largely a result of censorship and what they could portray at the time as well. But yeah, you do get the sense that Oliver is sort of just like desperate to marry anybody in a way, you know? Like,
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
like a week of meeting each other, it seems.
Yeah, I was like, why are you so willing to be okay with not having sexual relationships? Which is fine. Like, I also just want to be clear, because I think that this is like my one critique, maybe, and it's not like a critique, I just want to bring it up. We're two men talking about a movie that, is about a woman and her sexual life. So at least for me, any lens I speak through is going to be colored by my experiences as just a man. So that leads me to the fact that men made this movie about a woman. Is about a woman catfighting with another woman over a man. And I was like, it doesn't bother me, but through that lens, it's not the most up to date, I guess.
That's very true. I think like within the context of its time, it is, I think it does show more sensitivity towards what a woman would go through with like the sort of self-imposed or societally imposed sort of demands about her sexuality or expectations about how she can or should behave as a sexually active woman. I feel like this movie does show a lot of sensitivity towards that, whereas like other movies of the time would require her to be a wife, basically, or she would be punished for it. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I think maybe you could have that reading of this movie. But I don't, yeah, I still think this movie shows a lot of sympathy for her. And I think that she feels unable to be sexually active, certainly for the plot-based reasons that, the whole movie is about, but also for other reasons, which the movie sort of only hints at, which is that she can't be sexually active if she's not married. And then she does become married, and then she's worried about, maybe what will Oliver think or what, who will she become? So it's a great point that you bring up. Certainly the point that, there weren't a lot of female directors in Hollywood at the time, like maybe Ida Lupino and like experimental films. You could think of Maya Deren, but yeah, you're absolutely right that it was made by men and it should be sort of read very, very carefully for that, but I still think that the movie shows a lot of sympathy for her character.
Yeah, and I agree ultimately with all that as well. I think it's, though she is a woman, I will dare to say that what she's feeling can be universal. Like, you don't, man or woman or whatever, you know, if we're reading it through a sexual desire and frustration lens, that's a very human feeling. And jealousy and you're wanting to be something, but you can't. But trying to overcome your demons and ultimately I think she's a very strong character.
And I think it's amazing that like all of this is in a movie that's like barely more than an hour long. I think it's like an hour 10 minutes. It's just like it's so rich. Every single scene has things to take away from it. I think it's pretty incredible.
Yes. So I really didn't have anything other than that to put in the bad category.
Me either. Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about some of the things which could be criticized. And you know, I read some things about Simone Simon's performance, too, as Irena. And sort of, you know, her sort of stilted accent. She's a French actress, so some of her English line readings are a little bit awkward. Mm. But it's sort of like you said before, I think we so rarely see central characters that are not American in American movies at this time. That, you know, even if it is awkward at times, I think the uniqueness of it more than makes up for that. So... Yeah. I personally would not put that in the bad category. I know some people have in the past, but there are very few things in the bad category for me with this movie.
Yeah, honestly. So for downright campy, I just wanted to say, like, mostly I loved the, like, through costume and makeup, like, they and action, they gave Irena cat-like qualities. Sometimes I feel like it was a little too on the nose. Like, for example, she puts her hand in the canary cage and kills the canary.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that was necessary. Yeah.
Like, we get it. She's a cat person.
Well, yeah. Also, the other Serbian woman that she meets in that restaurant is really made up to look cat-like. I mean, you almost expect to see, like, whiskers painted on her face. Maybe almost a little over the top, but I'm okay with it.
Totally, yeah. I love the campy stuff. It just lightens the mood a little bit.
Yeah. And I would also say that Paul Schrader's 1982 remake of Cat People is way campier than the 1942 version of Cat People is.
Okay.
Which
I did not get around to seeing it yet. So maybe we can bring that to the show sometime.
Definitely. Yeah, that's worth a whole episode unto itself.
Yeah. So I think we're both in accord here, but I would give this movie classic status. I think it stands the test of time.
So I sort of cut out there. I don't know if I...
Oh, my bad. I was saying I'd give it classic status. And that it stands the test of time thanks to its unique, tight pacing and direction and universal themes, concepts. It checks all the boxes.
I would totally agree with that. Both Cat People and I Walked with a Zombie are two of the best horror movies from around this time, in my opinion. I think what they're able to do with suggestion and subtlety and how character-based they are and just how much sort of... how much they say about the time and place in which they were made. These are endlessly rich movies, which are still pretty creepy at times. Classic status for me too.
Fantastic. Matt, are you willing and able to come back next week to talk about The Fly, the 50s Fly?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We talked about, you know, Goldblum. So we should talk about Vincent Price. I'm definitely there.
Yeah. So many good things. I love chatting about this stuff with you. Thank you for coming on again. And I'm excited for next week.
Me too. Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Yeah. Take care. I'll let you get out of here.
All right. Thanks, Vincent. See ya.
Bye, Matt.
Bye.
And thank you all for hanging out again. Give it up for Matt Levine. Check out our episode On the Fly from a few weeks ago. Get caught up, because you know we're going to talk about it again with the Vincent Price Fly next week. So like, follow, engage, do all the fun stuff. Get a cool t-shirt. We got our new Dracula-inspired spooky season shirts. You can hit the link in the bio for that. And until next time, stay campy. See ya.